You ever have one of those nights at the hangar where somebody tells you a story so outrageous you're sure they're pulling your leg? I'm Taildragger, this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar, and tonight I've got one of those stories, except every word of it is true. Pull up a chair. It's May 28, 1987. The Cold War is still very much a thing. Ronald Reagan is in the White House, Mikhail Gorbachev is running the Soviet Union. And somewhere in Helsinki, Finland, a 19-year-old West German kid named Matthias Rust is doing his pre-flight on a rented Cessna 172 Skyhawk. A plain white single-engine trainer, the kind of airplane you and I learned to fly in. 50 hours in his logbook, 50 hours, most of us at 50 hours are still nervous about flying to the practice area alone. This kid is about to fly into the most heavily defended airspace on the planet. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com, and I'll tell you, whatever coin they make for the stunt we're about to talk about, it'd have to be solid brass. So here's what happened. Russ had been planning this for weeks. He told people he was going on a sightseeing tour of the Nordic countries. He flew from Hamburg to the Faroe Islands, then to Keflavik in Iceland, then to Bergen in Norway, and finally to Helsinki on the morning of the 28th. He took off from Helsinki-Malmi Airport, filed a flight plan to Stockholm, headed west over the Gulf of Finland, and then simply turned. He turned east, toward the Soviet Union. Now here's where it gets interesting. He crossed the Soviet border somewhere over Estonia, and the Soviets spotted him almost immediately. Their radar picked up the little Cessna, a blip. A tiny, slow-moving blip crawling along at about 100 knots at low altitude. And the air defense system, the legendary PVO Strainy, the most paranoid integrated air defense network ever built, the system designed to stop American bombers and cruise missiles, they saw him, they tracked him, and then they proceeded to fumble the response in ways that still make military historians shake their heads. A pair of interceptors were scrambled, MiG-23s. Supersonic fighters sent after a Cessna 172, doing maybe 110 knots. Think about that for a second. That's like sending a Corvette to chase a kid on a bicycle. The MiGs found him, they flew past him, they reported a small, low-flying aircraft, and then they were told to return to base. Why? Because the Soviet military had just implemented a new policy after the Korean Airlines flight 007 tragedy in 1983. You remember that one? A Soviet interceptor shot down a Korean Boeing 747 that strayed into Soviet airspace. 269 people killed, the international outrage was enormous, so the Soviets had quietly changed their rules of engagement. They were not supposed to shoot down civilian aircraft anymore. And this little Cessna? Well, it sure looked civilian, but that wasn't the only reason. There was confusion in the chain of command. Radar operators lost track of him, then found him again, then lost him. The kid was flying low, maybe 700, 800 feet above the ground, weaving along roads and rivers. The radar returns kept fading in and out. At one point, the air defense system was tracking him as a friendly aircraft, because a Soviet pilot had declared an emergency in roughly the same area, and somehow the two radar tracks got merged. The bureaucracy of the Soviet military was literally tripping over itself. Rust flew on hour after hour, over forests, over farmland, over rivers that wound through countryside that no Western pilot had ever seen from the air at low altitude. He followed the highway, the main road from the Baltic states toward Moscow. He just followed it like a VFR pilot following a railroad track on a cross country, which is exactly what he was. He had a couple of close calls. At one point, he saw a helicopter that seemed to be shadowing him. He descended lower, the helicopter went away. Whether it was military or civilian, he never knew. He flew on. Now imagine being in that cockpit. You're 19 years old. You have 50 hours total time. You're sitting in a Cessna 172 over the Soviet Union during the Cold War. You have no radar, no radio contact with anyone, no flight plan that means anything anymore. You are completely and utterly alone in a way that most pilots never experience. The engine is humming along. That Lycoming 0320, the most reliable engine ever bolted to an airframe, and it's the only thing between you and a very, very bad day. 4 hours after crossing the border, Matthias Rust saw the skyline of Moscow. He circled Red Square. He circled it. Like a student pilot entering the pattern at a towered field, except the tower was the Kremlin, and the runway was a bridge next to St. Basil's Cathedral. He made a couple of passes looking for a place to land. He considered the Kremlin lawn, but it was too crowded with people. He looked at Red Square itself, but there were cables strung across it that he later said he spotted at the last moment, so he picked a wide bridge, the Bolshoi-Moskvoretsky Bridge, right next to the square. He made his approach, dodged some cars and a trolley bus, touched down on the bridge, and rolled to a stop in the square itself, right next to the walls of the Kremlin, right next to St. Basil's Cathedral with those candy-colored onion domes that every kid recognizes from a picture book. He shut down the engine. He climbed out, and he started signing autographs. I'm not making that up. Tourists gathered around. They thought it was some kind of stunt, some kind of air show performance. A young Western kid, blonde hair, jeans, a red flight suit he'd bought just for the occasion. He stood there next to the Cessna in the shadow of the Kremlin and shook hands with Soviet citizens like he was at a meet and greet. It took the KGB about an hour to show up and arrest him. An hour. The geopolitical fallout was enormous. Gorbachev was reportedly furious. Not just angry, humiliated. A teenager in a trainer aircraft had just exposed the entire Soviet air defense network as a paper tiger. The Minister of Defense, Sergei Sokolov, was fired. The head of the Air Defense Forces was fired. Dozens of generals and officers lost their commands. Gorbachev used the whole incident as a political weapon. He cleaned house. He replaced the old hardline military leadership with younger, more reform-minded officers. Historians have argued, and I think they're right, that Rust's flight actually accelerated the end of the Cold War. It gave Gorbachev the excuse he needed to push the military old guard aside and continue his reforms. Glasnost and Perestroika got a turbo boost from a kid in a Skyhawk. Rust himself was sentenced to 4 years in a Soviet labor camp for hooliganism, illegal border crossing, and violating international flight rules. Hooliganism? That might be the greatest understatement in aviation history. He served 14 months before Gorbachev pardoned him and sent him home. And the airplane? The Cessna 172, registration Delta Echo Charlie Sierra Papa, it sat in a Moscow warehouse for years. There were rumors it ended up in a museum. Other rumors it was scrapped. The truth is a little murky, the way truth often is when the Soviet Union is involved. Now, I want to be clear about something. What Rust did was reckless. It was dangerous. It was illegal in about 15 different ways. He could have been shot down. He could have hit those cables over Red Square. He could have clipped that trolley bus on the bridge and killed a dozen people, as pilots. We don't celebrate recklessness. We've all known somebody who pushed it too far and didn't come home. But sitting here in the hangar, telling this story, I can't help but marvel at it. 50 hours, a Cessna 172, 750 miles into the most heavily defended airspace on Earth. And he made it. The airplane performed. That Lycoming ran smooth the whole way. The kid navigated with a paper chart and a compass and a roadmap he bought in Helsinki. No GPS, no moving map, just pilotage and dead reckoning, the same way we all learned, the same way pilots have been finding their way since barnstorming days. And the thing that gets me every time I tell this story is this. After everything, after the arrest, the trial, the labor camp, the media circus, Matthias Rust never flew again. Not seriously. He got his freedom, came back to West Germany, and the sky. Well, the sky was done with him, or he was done with it. I don't know which. But that kid who was brave enough or crazy enough to fly a Cessna into Red Square never became a pilot. Sometimes the biggest flight of your life is the only one you need. That story tonight came mostly from a wonderful account by Peter Duffy, and from the original reporting in Der Spiegel back in 87. You can find more at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there, and check your charts before you head east.